Hello and welcome to another episode of the Edgy Futurists. It is our first duo review of the year where there is no guest, but it's the first time as a two, Ben, I think, isn't it?
Yeah.
Or first time as a two when there's actually a two. Sometimes Ben could Dan couldn't attend because he was flying everywhere. So it might
Or you couldn't attend. Or together. You couldn't attend.
No, let's talk about the bad times. Let's talk about the bad times. So we only criticise Dan because he's not here. We can't criticise me. I'm still here. But no, I'm not joking. Yeah, there was one where we probably reviewed, but there was a two. But this is the first official one where Dan's not going to be turning up, waiting in the sidelines.
He might do. He might do. I think he's still got login to StreamYard, so he might just
he's riding bareback on an alligator, isn't he, or something.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Or he might be on the moon in an astronaut suit.
Yeah, yeah, maybe, yeah. Maybe. He's always looking younger in his photos. Yeah. Hint. Wonder what tool he's using. This is really bad. Definitely not. But Mid Journey, anybody using Mid Journey, including you, Ben, and Jamie Smith. Thanks for listening, Jamie. Everybody starts to look younger. And I was like, is it a New Year's resolution? Is it a new facial cream? No, it's just Mid Journey making everybody look younger. I'm not into the art of Mid Journey. I like the tool. I'm a Yorkshireman and I'm tight and I'm not paying for it. So I don't get those features of looking younger. This is what you get every day of the week.
Sarah is such a lucky lady.
She is, mate. You are totally correct. She is. She doesn't know how lucky she is. But yeah, we are three episodes in. This is our fourth one. We started strongly. I think we kicked off the new year with an absolute blast, bringing back an old friend of ours, John Neal. That, and also, just to clarify with everybody, we are talking about the future and the past in this episode, which is a real strange
Twilight zone. This is what it is.
So we're talking about this will be released when Better's already happened, but Better's not happened yet. So it's an interesting one. We were umming and ahhing with, do we pretend Better's happened? I was like, no, because whenever we do with the next review, we really want to share about some of the great stuff that we'll be doing down there.
So actually, what we could have called this episode is the Schrodinger's cat episode.
I don't even know what that is, but that sounds interesting. What is that?
The Schrodinger's cat is like a philosophical experiment that basically means there's a cat inside of a box, and you don't know whether it's alive or dead when it's in the box. So because you don't know whether it's alive or dead, at that very moment, it is both alive and dead because it's neither one. That's a very, very simple.
Or is it alive and dead, or is it just alive and dead in the context of people not knowing?
Correct. It's about a perception of reality. So that's what we're in. Right. We're lacking a perception of reality. That's what we are now. So we're in Bet. We're not Bet. It's post Bet, but it's before Bet. It's like, where are we? What even is this?
Yeah. I do know what it is, and this will probably give the game away. It's freezing today.
Oh, it's cold today. It is really cold.
It's absolutely so cold.
4:30 a.m. in the car. At 4:30 a.m. in the car, going to swimming, and then I went to the gym. Yeah, just saying.
So did you drop her off swimming, and is that why you're? Is it brand new, Ben, and getting up early, or is it the fact that your daughter is an avid swimmer and doing really, really well, so you have to get up at that time?
This is Schrodinger's, Ben. It is. My daughter gets up. Or Ben wants to be a new mate. Ben, you don't know which one it is.
I know which one it is. The daughter wins.
Correct.
Yeah. Only it's a good opportunity to get up. You are taking the leaf out of Lawrence Tajani's book. Yes. That guy gets up at 4 o'clock.
Even at the weekend, man.
Yeah, he's dedicated. Love to see it, though. Like, you know, he's on it, and I'm thinking, I want to be more like Lawrence. I'll be honest. I'd love to
be more Lawrence.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, yeah. I do in a lot of things. I don't know. He's a very inspiring guy, and what a great journey that is. But I just don't know whether, we alternate whether we're going to sleep one night or not, generally, because Ollie still doesn't sleep. And I'm like, today, 6 o'clock was the earliest I was getting up today. You know, there's no way I was, and that's because I was woken up at 4:45, and I was like, can I get back to sleep for a bit? And I did. I was like, 4:45 seems just too early to get up. And then I was thinking, and I looked at my watch and I thought, Lawrence has been up 45 minutes.
I had been up as well 40 minutes at that point, yeah.
But you still wear your PJs to the gym, Ben. So it doesn't really count, mate. And last night's underwear. on.
And anyway, what is that? Not what you're supposed to do?
No, but anyway, Five minutes in, and we've been talking about underwear, getting up early, everything else. But it is, you know what? The thing that this relates to is our community, our learning from our community.
Yeah.
So let's be honest, we are part of a bigger community. The Uprising was an event that we put on talking about the community stuff last year.
Yeah.
Ultimately, people like John, people like Lawrence, and everybody else have been part of our community, our personal learning network for a long time. I met Lawrence in 2019, I think it was, at Sweden Innovator, and have been friends ever since. What a great guy. And yeah, I see him on the morning, I was like, and he's smashing it, to be fair. So they say, I think it was Kevin Sinfield's book, if anybody's knows Kevin Sinfield. He's not a sir yet. He should have been knighted, doing a lot of work for MND. Ex-professional rugby league player for Leeds Rhinos. Legend in the city of Leeds. And he's the England Rugby Union defence coach, I think, is his current role.
But, for now, he's leaving, isn't he?
Is he? Right. Yeah. But he's doing loads for R&D. So he ran seven ultramarathons in 7 days recently and raised £1 million for M&D research for his good friend Rob Burrows. But in his book, he talks about you're only as good as the five people closest to you and that you surround yourself with. And he talked about the community and the feel and the family feel at Leeds Rhinos. And it stuck with me because I was thinking, who's my closest five people? Do you know, and what do I learn from them? Are they the best people? And I suppose as you get older, the community that you surround yourself with and the people, it's a more of a choice. Where sure. When you're at school, you're in your form and your group, you might not get on with everybody in the group, but you do because you like some members of the group. Whereas now, I feel my community is a selected community, not a selective. It's not some kind of, you know, hierarchy. It's not some sitting on a pedestal. I can select the people I want to spend the time with now. And is it, as you approach your 40th year, Ben, and I've just had mine, I think it's a realisation of, I only want to spend time with people that actually add value to me. My family do massively. You know, they fill my cup up 100%. But yeah, surrounding myself with people that I've made a choice to really think, what value do they add selfishly?
Do you know what? I think there's a huge thing about like surrounding yourself in a. It's not a bubble either, because it's not about an echo chamber. And I've written about this recently in some of the stuff that I've been writing about, that it's very, very easy to fall into an echo chamber of this is people who believe what I believe, people who think like I think. And actually, the social media algorithms are designed in a way for you to see more of the things that you engage with, the more of the things that you pay attention to. So if you are more interested in one thing, you're going to get see more of it. If you show a little bit of engagement in something, you actually then can just perpetuate that echo chamber, that network. And there's a difference, I think, sometimes that when we surround ourselves with the kind of people that aren't the same as us, but we have a kinship. So I wrote this last week. You might have read it, Steve. I don't know. Probably not. There were more than like 10 words in it, and there were no pictures. Are there a few pictures?
Still can't read, mate. Still try my best.
No, but the thing I wrote about was I saw a post on Instagram from Adam Grant, author of Think Again and Originals. Some people have heard of his books. He's a brilliant, brilliant author. And he talked about a lot of people think that it's in your circles, it's about agreement, when actually it's about alignment. There's a difference between alignment and agreement. You don't have to agree on everything, but are we going in the same direction? Are we aligned in a similar way? This is we're getting very serious in this podcast, but I think it's very important that your network doesn't have to agree with what you believe, doesn't have to be exactly the same as you, doesn't have to echo the same sentiments in lots of ways, but there's got to be an alignment.
Yeah,
so I think that's where it sits, isn't it?
And also, I think people see discussion and not agreeing as a bad thing. I was having this conversation with some colleagues and I was talking about positive conflict. And I was like, if we all had exactly the same opinion, how would we ever change anything? How would we have somebody coming in or going, I think we could do that better? Because we only see one view of the world. And I think looking at things, if you don't agree with something, you're seen as often you're going, well, no, hold on a second, I'm going to block that person or anything else because they disagree with me. As long as they're not being rude or offensive, ultimately it's okay to have positive disagreements. Conflict is a way to change things, to iterate and evolve things. And I think, you know, having that positive thing of, Ben, let's be honest, we do not always see eye to eye.
No, we don't.
You know, we often disagree on things and everything else, but as friends, that you work through it and then you come to commonalities and think, well, you know, and then you pick your battles, don't you? And think, well, ultimately, when you review, well, actually, and you cool down and you go through all that thing of, I think positive challenge and conflict is actually a good thing, but I think it's become a bad word, and I don't think conflict always should be, because conflict is attached to the things that we see on the news that are currently happening. Do you know, whether you agree with that? And I think that's terminology that's applied to that rather than war. Conflict is something that's given to that, and we see just that side of it.
And I suppose sometimes the nature of conflict we hear like that, you just said in the news, but we also hear these phrases like conflict resolution, and it's about somehow making the peace when people have fallen out. Well, it depends what direction we're going in. In my mind, like, we want to bang on about the future of education. We want to see some things change. So let's just, there's some things that we're aligned on. We don't agree on everything, but there's some things we're aligned on. So, for instance, we're aligned on the fact that the model of education that we see primarily in the West, in fact, not just in the West, but primarily across the world, is not fit for the world that young people are moving into, and actually, more regularly, the world that they're in now. So it's not fit for purpose. And that's not the cry. And the other thing that's in point about that we're in alignment with and probably agreement on is that that is not necessarily the fault of individual teachers or individual schools. That's a systemic problem. So we've got an alignment and agreement about this idea that there's a systemic problem that education is not fit for, because it was created in an era that it was fine for, but it's not now fit for purpose. Now, how we move forward with that, we don't always have to agree. So some people, I know we have some people that believe that the future is online schooling. The future, some people think the future is homeschooling. Some people think the future is a hybrid. And whereas other people think that being in a physical building is definitely a future, but how we do it within the future is up for grabs. Now, all those things are not agreements, but there is an alignment. So then when we have choice within the school system, or hopefully we'll have choice within the school system, then you can choose whichever thing you feel like you agree with most. And I think alignment is mean we're moving in a general direction the same way. How we get there is, it doesn't have to be the same path, does it?
No, I agree. And it goes back to episode 2 of this season, when we looked at equity and access to education, and talked about the apartheid, talked about, you know, the schooling system in South Africa at the time, you know, the real unfairness and lack of equity in that system. And it was only changed by the students. And I know there's a bigger picture and there'll be different things that have really changed the structures. But in that instance, the conversation on the podcast, if you haven't listened to it, go listen to episode 2, because it talks about how the students themselves didn't see diversity in terms of race and colour of skin as something that should really divide them. And they came together and started to form, even though the classroom was split, they started to create their own pockets of learning and projects. And I thought that was inspirational. Really did. And really, I went away. I've done more reading from it and everything else. But unless you've lived it and you've been, and I have no real understanding of what it could have been like. No way could I understand what that is, what that would ever be like, and neither of my children. I'll be honest.
And to be honest, like, I've been out in South Africa a couple of times, and obviously been over to Rwanda as well. And around Rwanda, for anybody who's listening to this and doesn't have an understanding, is that in 1994, the biggest, one of the biggest modern genocides in our in our lifetime, 1994, there were over a million people killed. And so that was when apartheid went to its furthest extreme, that one tribe believed or one people group believed that another people group didn't deserve to be there. And I suppose when you see that, and I went into those places and hear these stories, SA2 is a friend, so I hear the stories of what it was like for him firsthand, being a black South African in education, and even like domination of language and exclusion because of language, the fact that you were not allowed to identify in your same way. And if you listen to SA2's interview, that episode 2 that Steve's talking about, he talked even about his hair, and like the cultural heritage about the length of the hair was restricted because culturally they should shave it short, but the school made it so that it had to be a certain length. So by creating an arbitrary rule, there becomes this sense of inequity. And so that hearing those stories really, really resonated with me as well. And I think to hear that from a position of privilege, like I have no doubt about it. Like I have my own bias, my own privilege. I understand how you feel. I have no way to understand that. And for me to try and even say that I have an understanding is just disingenuous as well. And so like I try, when I speak to people like SA2 and who have lived through this, and I know that I talked to a friend who's going to come on a podcast in a few months' time, Ken Shelton, similar principles, like there's no way for you to understand this, Ben, because you've never lived in that level of inequity and that level of discrimination. So yeah, to learn from that, we have a responsibility to learn from it, but we'll never understand it like in the same way. So it's a really difficult one, but it's a difficult path that we have to tread, isn't it?
Yeah, and but a real positive from SA2, a real positive success story, a light despite challenges, the role he's in currently and potentially anywhere that he goes beyond, and the influence he's having and the work that he's doing is massive, from those stories that he was telling us right at the beginning to all of the different journeys, the different roles he's done, the development, all that, how he's gone from this job to this job to this job, but progressed really rapidly and smashed it despite of that. And he talked about his dad's influence, that his dad was quite hands-on and forceful in terms of that, of you won't be beaten, you won't, no son of mine is giving up, this is how you have to do. But that was, he felt that was really instrumental in terms of his development, and that never give up, always can do attitude, I think, has got him to where he is, and he'll absolutely fly. Spent an hour with him on the podcast and probably about 5 hours off air, because that guy can talk. But really positive, and to spend any time with him, you know that person is going to be, is going to change things massively, where he is and where he's from. So yeah, and he's part of your community now, Ben. I know you do a lot of work out there and everything else, and I know that you're going out. What date is it that you're going out again?
I'm going out on May the 13th. The conference is May the 17th or 18th, I think. So yeah.
So if you're in the, and I know we've got listeners from all different regions and all 7 continents. I need to check. I don't think we've got anybody from Antarctica or anything like that. But we've definitely got them from the. I'm almost certain we've got them from the other 6. Looking at the listenership from the first 3 episodes of this season. So wherever you are, have a think about it. And if there's anybody from that region, get to that conference. Listen to Ben. Mm-hmm. Listen to SA2 if he's presenting. And go join that community, because I think it's a strong one and one that's developing pretty quick and rapidly.
The Innovate EDU conference. So we'll put a link in the show notes to that, Innovate EDU. It's a powerful one. It really is a powerful one. Go on. Sorry, Steve.
No, I was just going to say, and going back to John, the first foundations that we talked about for this season was community. Developing your own community and what does that look like? John has been part of communities and also led communities in terms of his work of been a Google trainer and that side, and been an Apple teacher and everything else, and also been part of the school community when he was leading it. But then has also done some massive work with Moat and has now moved on to quizzes and he'll be focused on the UK growth there, where he's then, how do we develop communities with these brands, but not doing it just to benefit the brand? And he spent a lot of time in terms of, like, you know, authentic self and authentic communities, and how do you really develop that, and doing it for the right reasons and values led, nothing else. So yeah, I thought the podcast was, and it was, you know, the stats showed that it was a really well listened to one.
Yeah, so
it was great to start season three with it.
Yeah, and the thing is about John as well is it was that phrase that I really pick up from it is that authenticity, the authentic community. And he talks about that a lot. If you follow John on socials, he talks about building authentic community. And you're absolutely bang on there that it's not about the benefit of the brand or making more sales, although that will be perfectly part of that. It's about how those brands then or genuinely and authentically support the people in the schools. And one of the things that went quite big around socials was that phrase where he talked about teachers and school leaders have got a really, really strong BS radar, and that ability to be able to look beyond what you are saying to what you really saying behind it. Like, yeah, this is really, really good. Let's all have a community. Let's have a great, like, little, we'll put drinks on and we'll do this and that and the other, and here's some free swag. But actually, it isn't about the community. It's about maintenance and development of a brand, or even it's about sales. And we've been, Steve, we've been part of this, and we won't obviously in this space name names or whatever else, but we've been part of things where the community or people wanted to work with us as Edge Futurists, and they want to exploit our community for their benefit, and they want enclosed spaces, they want they need, it's all about the metrics. How many more numbers can we get? How far can we take this? How many sales can it get? When actually we think that authentic engagement and that real who we are matters most. Alex Emozi talks about that 1,000 loyal fans, like the importance really is, I'd rather have a regular listenership, a regular group of people that are part of the Wolfpack, a regular people that come to our awards, than let's take over the world and let's have tens of thousands and hundreds of thousands. And don't get me wrong, if it went up, grew authentically, and it grew in the manner that we wanted it to do into those kind of numbers, we're not going to turn that away. But I would much rather a tight-knit community than a community that has disparaging. But it's not about agreement again, it's about alignment. So aligned, yeah, around that Wolfpack thing, isn't it?
Yeah, and you said it right at the beginning. We've often talked about how do we get from where we are to thousands of listeners each podcast, and then beyond that, and be going to get into the top 10 podcasts, when you see that, or a number one podcast or whatever. I don't even know what listenership you need to get to that point, and we're over exaggerating, but ultimately we are on the cusp of the niche. We are the kind of alternative approach to education, unfortunately, especially in England, where our view is probably not with the current political agenda, and also it's against what's happened for such a long period of time, that the normality through choice or through just teachers just been overworked and doing what they can do to get through each day positively. To change that and to listen to a different view is always down to that whole thing of, I haven't got time. But also change takes pain, takes discomfort. It's not easy to change. And the problem is, this is not teachers, by the way, but actually across many, it's easier to just keep with what we've got. And I think that's a challenge that, we probably won't get to 10,000 teachers listening. We hopefully will do, as the change happens. But right now, there's more people maybe on the what we call the trad side than the alternative side, and we're talking about what we want for the future based on our views, and it's not everybody's view. We've juggled with that. How do we get into that market? And it's like, well, ultimately, they either want to listen to it or they don't. We can't change other people's behavior. We can only change our behavior to them and how we approach it and how we try and do it. And we ran that event and we had 100 people turn up from Edufuturist Uprising last year. What a lovely event, because, and that's people who ran it, but this is what people said to us. We've got quotes from it. And hopefully we'll be bringing it back into 2024. That whole thing of people felt that it was part of a community. It felt like a great space to connect with people, like-minded people, people on the same theme. If we invited people that really were anti our approach, the community would be very, very different, because it would, you know, it wouldn't be a community then. It'd just be inviting just to get the numbers up. Is what I'm trying to say. And I think, you know, I'd rather stick with 100, 150 and go to 200 than try and get 1,000 people in a room just because they've won an award but don't really believe in what the award is.
Yeah. And I think it's a really difficult balance, because as a podcast and as a awards events and anything else that we do, we would love our message to be mass market. We would love to be having a conversation with the Department for Education. If there anybody's listening and can get us into having a conversation, or the Shadow Department for Education, or speaking to the big assessment organizations. And we've done bits of this, but we've not done it consistently. Like, I'd love to be talking to the big independent schools and the big policy makers. And we do believe at some point, this message that we've been banging on about for 7 years will become a little bit more mainstream. However, we do acknowledge that truth of we'd rather have an authentic community, a true people that aren't settling for where we are. And some people say nobody ever settles, and I'm not entirely sure that is true, because I think we do settle and we accept because it's comfortable. Interestingly as well, just one other thing to jump on. John talked about what he believed the skill of the future was going to be. He talked about it being storytelling. And then I subscribed to the Harvard Business Review. I love it. I love the look of it. I went for the dual thing. So I have the electronic version, but I also get a Posted magazine, because I do
somebody's
like
doing, somebody's doing well. Somebody's doing well. Do you know what it's that's the most expensive way. I don't know, like, literally, if it could have been sent via carrier pigeon, I'd have probably done it. But the paper print. So what I'll do is I'll just get them all off Ben after.
You know, yeah, you can read them after. I'll photocopy them and scan them in and send them you.
No, you're not allowed to do that. You're just allowed to hand over. Do you know that? And share them.
Sorry, yeah, I will never do that. But like, excuse me. The you might be able to see this on the thing. Like one of the articles from the November December edition, for some reason my November December edition and my January February edition came at the same time. I don't know why, but they did. But one of the title pages, cover pages, start stories, is storytelling that drives bold change. And in that article, Francis Fry and Anna Morris talk about this idea of storytelling in an organization, the ability for a brand to be able to tell a story. And obviously some of the people know that some of the work that I do is around helping people cultivate and create a story. But that storytelling that drives bold change, I really thought that from what John had said, as storytelling being the skill that we feel like young people in 2040 will need, and then seeing that article, it just really made me think, increasingly, the ability to tell a story that leads to a bold future, a story that drives change in a bold way, you've got to really articulate that in a way that engages people. Like, yeah, so a skill, a future-focused skill on storytelling, and I'm not sure whether we do enough of that. I'm just not sure whether we do enough of that in education, whether we need to do more.
Yeah, maybe in primary, maybe in very early years, do we even focus on that before metrics get involved in regards to tracking students' progress and everything else? You know, they still do, but it's not as led, which is such a shame, because it then just becomes about reading, writing, maths rather than actually the ability to communicate effectively and share your version of a story and everything else that comes with it. I think
it's that bit, Steve. It's that bit. Because I think they do creative writing at GCSE English, and they've got to write in the style of a war reporter or something like that. We remember all that. So they do have to tell stories, but it's that authentic, your own story, your own ability to be able to put a spin on it.
I've been out of education for a couple of years now, and I've not been in primary. That was one of my last roles. When I left education, I still remained a chair of governors for a period of time. But my challenge with all of this stuff around creativity is, are we going to do a creative task? Write a newspaper article or write a letter? And like, you can be creative within there, but you've shackled one's ability. So I remember the primary school where I was a chair of governors, the activity was to tell the story about the Great Fire of London. It's on social media. If you go to Elements Primary, there's a wonderful video of this storytelling. So there's one where somebody had thought, you know what, I'm going to write this. I'm going to create a story and everything else. And then there's one, I can't remember the girl's name, but she tells it like a news reporter, as if she's live on the scene of the Great Fire of London. This girl's like four. It was honestly, and I remember seeing it and it'd been shared. And I was like, this is absolutely ridiculously good, because what they've said is, tell the story in your own way about the Great Fire of London. And I know that's not the most creative, because you want to put your own slant on something very different rather than just regurgitate it. But what they did is they took the shackles off and said, you present this however you want to present it back. And the diversification of how these students presented it back was so varied. Because they all said, well, what's creative to me, however I want to do it, is could be written, could be verbal, could be just without not been on camera and everything else. And it just opened up that whole thing of what does creativity mean to you? And a four-year-old, it was inspiring to see it, because I was like,
that's it, isn't it?
So, but then when they get
to 11. It's good, isn't it?
We do it, but don't forget in GCSE, we do an oral. What, for German? Come on. Like mine, I did German GCSE. And none of the language that I did in my conversation, or 99% of it, is completely useless.
My Google scriber is kaput.
I don't even know what that means. And
that
I did
means
German
my
for really 2 years.
Is broken.
Was it?
Yeah, something like that.
Google scriber. But yeah, mine was like, my teddy bear sits on my bed or something random. And I was like, what is that? I don't know. when you're learning these languages now, it's like certain stuff, but you want to be able to order stuff, you want to be able to ask for directions, you want to be able to tell people where you're from and all that kind of thing, because you need to learn the bare bones and then be able to apply it to take it forward. But yeah, I think storytelling is massive, and I think John, I agree with John. Your ability to vocalize stuff. A lot of my friends and people say to me, I couldn't do a podcast, and I was like, why? It's just having a conversation. It is telling a bit of a story, I suppose, isn't it? But I think there's that nervousness, because it's not a skill that, unless you're in teaching or unless you're in something, you do on a regular basis, because we've not prepared people for it. Because right now people go, they're really anxious about presenting in front of people. We're just not going to do it. So that means that everybody else, the shackle, everybody else's ability to do it. And I get it, but there's different ways that you can support somebody with anxiety presenting or being creative or telling a story. That could be at home, just speaking into a recorder that then is shared. It doesn't have to be standing up. Remember, Joe, Ben, when we started, where it's like this, all the group has to do a presentation. You've got 20 kids in your group, and all of them would have to stand up half an hour each and present back. And by the end, you're just losing the will to live. There's different ways through screencastify and all these different and screencasts and Wii Video and all this other stuff now, that you don't have to be in the room. You can remove one of the anxiety barriers. And if people are anxious, and we talk about that and say, we're not going to do that because I'm not being funny, but let's reevaluate the anxiety that examples on people if we're going to really go there.
I didn't know you were going to go there, Steve. But ultimately, yeah, public speaking is one of the number one fears that people have. But I think there's a lot of anxiety that comes around exams and as well. So I think you're right. That ability to tell stories, but creatively tell them. It's amazing how many people come on our podcast. And in the prep work, some of you might think we just wing it. We don't. We actually do think about what we're going to say sometimes, anyway, at least to an extent, that people want scripted questions. The amount of people that like, what are we going to talk about? And we go like, well, just listen to an episode and you'll realize we go from this to this to this. We have a general themes that we might talk about, but it'll never, ever be scripted. And the day that we have to be scripted, the day that it just moves away. And then we tell our story. Is it neat? No. Is it finished and polished? No. But that's okay. It's not. We're not trying to be something we're not. Yeah. And then obviously our final guest this month was... I'm glad Steve has these kind of connections because sometimes he pulls a blinder out of the bag, you know, like somebody who has had a serious amount of success at some of the biggest names in the world, never mind just in education, but in the world of education, and he's now flying in her own executive coaching stuff. So having Liz on and talking about, obviously, some of the lessons that she learned in her roles for Google, for Lego, for Pearson, just straight away, like just them, you know what I mean? To get somebody like her on, it was a massive privilege, weren't it, Steve?
Yeah, I met Liz. So I'd known Liz quite a while in education. I was doing a lot of work with Google. The tool was quite in its infancy in terms of the software. Chromebooks had been in existence for a couple of years, but we were going through that process. And I'd met Liz, and I think she was head of UK and Ireland, but I think she might have been. She might have been already on the role looking at Europe, Middle East, and Africa. A very different character to what I kind of imagined. Because when I'm in education, I'm thinking, well, this person's looking after all of this region. Oh my God. But then I've come to learn you're not speaking to Google. You're speaking to somebody who works for Google. Everybody is a person, and don't see it as a big trillion-dollar brand. See it as the individual that's working with it. And Liz, from the north, northwest, so from the lakes originally, and really lovely person.
The posh bit of the north, that's the posh bit of the northwest.
Yeah, definitely. But always willing to give up her time, really generous with her time and her ideas and everything else. And Liz had a great journey and took Google for Education to moved it forward massively. To a common brand when we were talking about it's like, what, Google, a search engine in education? We search on Google. We use Chrome. People weren't even using Chrome back in 2012 and 13. It was an alternative browser, whereas now it's very different. But she's been on a massive journey, and it's great to see that through all of her roles now, she's now doing individual coaching, but group coaching, creating community of coaching. And it was interesting through conversations with Liz when she talked about something that I often see and we often see where teachers have some teachers say, well, have you ever taught? Otherwise, why do I need to listen to you? And I think it's the same in education leadership, that if you haven't been a head teacher, often people will say, well, how can you tell me about being a head teacher because you've never been one? But funny, but in any other leadership role, you listen to leaders from different organizations and different spaces, because ultimately they have a real good insight of leadership as leadership. And Liz has been working with charities, as she said on the podcast, and working with deputy heads, and he's now starting to influence education through multi-academy trust and large organizations, and he's doing well. And I think with Liz's coaching and leadership guidance and support, education leadership has to be in a better place, because it's been supported by somebody who has led global organizations.
And it's not that, oh, well, if you haven't been a teacher, and I do understand that argument. I do understand it to an extent. I'm not saying it's perfectly right. I understand the fact that if you've not sat delivered, don't let Bob Harrison hear me say that word, taught in a classroom to 30 year 8 boys on a Tuesday or Wednesday afternoon, and they've just had PE. And
on a cold Monday in Stoke, Ben, is that what you're trying to say?
No, there is something very, very unique about having to deliver or teach. I've said it again. Sorry, sorry, Bob, don't shoot me. He probably has
support learning, support learning, support learning,
facilitate learning. Yeah, okay. Like, there is something unique about that, and I understand it. Because I've been there, and we, as we both have. However, like, you're right, you're absolutely, you're bang on. Like, Dave Brailsford, Sir Dave Brailsford, who was obviously leader at Team Sky, and when they were winning all sorts of stuff, and he was involved in the London 2012 Olympics and some of our biggest cycling wins, can transfer his skills and speak in from cycling into football and football into business work. Neil Malarkey, who we've got coming on the podcast in a few weeks' time, he is an improv comedian. So he does like improv acting, I suppose, comedy players. And they are transferring improv skills into business leadership, into education. We went to the Google Champions Symposium in Dublin, didn't we, Steve? And went to his sessions, and his sessions were just like insane. Like, if anybody was to ask what was the running order, what was the plan? Well, he had a plan, because he went through his five stages of his, that we won't ruin because he's going to talk about, five stages of improv. And then he talked about how that relates into work. And then people were doing like little stand-up show things, and stand up and start sit down. And it was like all over the show, but brilliant, because it was improv. And what did we learn from it? Well, we learned about exploring and offering, and we learned about listening, and we talked about how you accept an offer, how you take an offer on. We learned about collaboration. We learned about, like, and you think to yourself, I spent 2 hours in that session with him doing improv acting or improv comedy, essentially, and there's a massive transfer across. And that's the reason why I listen to as much and read as much as I do. I'm reading a book at the moment about economics. Like, am I an economist? No. Do I profess to be somebody who's got an understanding of that? No. But what can I pick up and what can you transfer across? And I think the reason why education has been the way it has for as long as it has is because we have stuck in our echo chamber silo of education being about, you can't speak into education unless you've done education. And I think it's well time that we move from that. So yeah, I massively resonated with that.
Yeah. And I think there's been a theme. There's always themes, isn't there? Do you know, like, we've, you know, we try and select our guests. We've got some, we've got millions lined up, and thanks to Ben. Ben's been smashing out of the park. Ben's got about 99.9% of our guests on, and I just pull out a big one every now and again.
Yeah, I tick it along, and then you just say, we'll have this one.
It works, Ben. We've got to change it if it's working. Change is hard. It's hard on me because I have to do more. But but it's been fun so far. I think the reflection of the first quarter or the first three as we've gone through, and obviously this now been our fourth, and coming towards the first, it's not the first quarter, is it? It's ultimately
first month,
the first 12th, the first 12th of the year. But I think we closed it down, and we said, you know, as a free, we couldn't really commit time to it and everything else. And then we had some conversations, didn't we, where you felt that, you know, you wanted to bring it back, and I agreed. And for whatever reason, but we were still unsure. We thought, you know, will we have time to dedicate to it? You know, will people, after a bit of a break, come back and listen? And the reflection is, the community is still there, and the community still is listening, and the community is still reaching out. It was great when we said we were coming back, the amount of people that messaged us directly or posted on social media saying, Happy New Year, brilliant, I'm great, glad to hear this back, or whatever, in their own words. That was really nice, I think, you know, because ultimately, we wouldn't do this if we didn't enjoy it. But it's also to know that there are people out there listening. It's not just me and Ben recording and enjoying it ourselves. That community is something that's so important to us. We've been part of the teaching community. We've been part of the leadership community. We've been part of the EdTech community. And also we are now as part of many different communities, and also trying to invite people into our to join our narrative of the future, what the future of education is today, tomorrow, and going forward. And I think we've got quite a few, and we'll hopefully celebrate at the next event in 2024.
For sure. For sure. And it's that phrase of, if you remember, anybody who's been an avid listener for any length of time will know that we talked about we are. It's not about. It was never about the three of us being the edgy futurists. And that was always, even though we get the edgy futurists here, or Ben from Edgy Futurists or whatever else. And yeah, we get that, but we always wanted Edgy Futurists to be about those people who embrace the future, who are willing to do the hard miles to make change happen. Those that are championing where we could go rather than maintaining where we are. We're all Edgy Futurists if we do that. And that's the message, really, isn't it? I suppose. And we, I found that in those three guests this 12th this month, the first three people that we've had on have genuinely helped us to think differently, but are edgy futurists in their own different way, aren't they? So yeah, it's been an absolute belting start. It's always good to do. We might not do a review every month, but we felt that after listening to those first three, that we saw a pattern, we saw a trend. We wanted to talk it out, and we wanted to bring it to a conclusion. And then we'll see where it goes as we move into. I think we're booked up until the end of March or nearly the end of March, which is exciting. So watch this space.
And don't forget some things that you can do for us. If you are part of the community and you don't do these things already, follow us on Spotify or subscribe to it's always in your inbox, and also so we get the numbers, which is great.
It's not about the numbers.
No, but we want a true reflection of the listenership. If there's any people that are leading businesses or want to get involved in the podcast, whether you want to advise or suggest a guest, if you want to be a guest, or if you're thinking, right, I'm from a particular company and anything else, and I listen and I believe in this, and I want to be part of the community and support the community, then we are open and we're reaching out to people that supported us previously for the event that's going to be coming up in terms of sponsorship for different awards and everything else, but also to sponsor the Edge of Futurist podcast. So please reach out on social or directly to us if you're interested, and we'll talk commercials. But if you're listening, get your money out and sponsor.
Thanks, Steve. Love it. No, it's not. It's not just about your money. We don't want you. We do want your money, but
we want to keep it going. We want to keep it going. You know, it's not about making millions of the podcast, but what it's about is being able to maintain what we've got. Like, you know, the quality of this stuff in regard, or what you feel hopefully is quality, is about the stuff that we have to invest in. And this doesn't happen for free. We invest in it in terms of our time and our money, myself and Ben. But we'd love, if you want to be involved in it and support us, then feel free to reach out to us, and we'd love to have a conversation with you. But even though we're not talking about it, this is going out after. We're excited for Bet next week. That was last week or whenever it happened, which is, you know, is the cat dead? Is it alive in the box? Not sure. But yeah, thanks for listening again, everybody.
Thank you.
It's been a blast.
Yeah, man.